In a tailpiece on the BizNews briefing last week, we featured a influencer who was castigated on social media after swimming in the sea off Cape Town and saying the water that she was tasting was, well, a little salty. Many of those who observed it said, hang on, you're swimming in poo. Well, let's find out from one of the country's experts, well, one of the world's experts on water and water contamination, Professor Leslie Petrick, who is a professor at the University of Western Cape, whether our influencer should be getting a stomach pump. Leslie, so good to have you on the show. Water is such a huge subject. In fact, yesterday I was with some of the executives at the Overstrand municipality, and the engineer who's busy with a project there tells me, well, his expertise is actually in water and he's all about focusing on water. So clearly it's something that is now coming increasingly into the consciousness. But to see the feedback after an influencer posts on social media that she's been swimming in the sea and, well, people thought that she was swimming in poo, I suppose tells you that it's gone beyond just a conversation of how clean is our water to something a lot deeper. Can we just start there, though? How bad is the marine sewage off Cape Town?
Morning, Alec. Very nice to be on your program. Look, the thing is that we have a serious problem of sewage right throughout the country. And many municipalities are battling with the same issue because of poor maintenance. But, you know, in Cape Town, we've got the unique situation where we are actually pumping the sewage, and let me emphasize, raw sewage, from Salt River all the way to Hout Bay into our marine environment through three marine outfalls. And that basically is emitted about between 900 meters and 1.2 kilometers offshore. But the problem is that although it's designed to diffuse and dilute in the ocean, the weather doesn't always play along. And very often, the wind or the tides or just the currents move the plume of sewage right onto the shore. And any visitor to Cape Town or any Capetonian can stand on top of Table Mountain and actually see the plume coming to Sea Point. It's very visible. You can also see the plume coming to Camps Bay and in Hout Bay if you're at any elevation from time to time. In fact, those plumes are actually visible from the satellite imagery. And Jean Cress from the wildlife photographer has often photographed those plumes. So yes, the sewage is a large volume that's daily discharged, and that's 24/7, 365 days of the year, ad infinitum. So every time you flush the toilet or use the sink or use your bathroom, that water, all the way from Salt River to Hout Bay, is going directly out to the ocean.
Doesn't sound terribly healthy. Well, other parts of the country don't have, certainly internal parts of the country don't have that or the ability to pump it into the sea. Clearly, they make a different plan. Why has Cape Town never done that?
Well, it's a legacy decision here because it's always been, especially like in the Sea Point case, that marine outfall was planned in the late 1800s. And there's been a protest about it for more than 100 years. But, you know, it's expedient to pump it out to sea because it's always a short-term thinking because municipal officers have got a short tenure and they don't want to take decisions that are going to require their budgets and so on to be affected. And so this kind of short-terminism is actually affecting our decision-making. And, you know, in the list of priorities of the city of Cape Town, the marine outfalls are last on the list of priorities. They have said categorically that they will start with the biggest problems first in terms of the sewage, and they'll work their way down. Now, according to them, the marine outfalls only represent about 5% of the total sewage being generated in the city every day. However, these are impacting our touristic beaches the most. So it is actually quite a big problem. And, you know, in terms of infections and so on, every disease-causing organism from the whole area, from Salt River to Hawke Bay, is going out with that sewage. So, you know, we typically are just checking for E. coli and Enterococci because those are indicators. They tell us that there's sewage in the water. But the disease organisms are not actually being measured. So we can't say categorically there's cholera there or there's TB there or there's a stomach bug or an eye infection bug there or even a flesh-eating organism. You know, R.W. Johnson landed in trouble because of one of those. So, you know, there are serious microbial hazards out there. There are viral hazards and there are also parasites coming out in the effluent. So, yes, if you hit the tide or the current at the wrong time, you will be swimming in effluent.
Yeah. Now, we know that internationally, and I'm going to come back to R.W., lost his leg as a result of stepping at Trafalgar Beach in KZN on a rock. And as a consequence of that, he had to be rushed to hospital and he only just made it. But I'd like to talk about KZN, which seems to be in a much worse situation. But let's compare Cape Town with where it needs to be compared. It's now rated as one of the top cities, top destinations in the world. London has addressed the Thames. Paris has addressed the Seine. It would suggest that if Cape Town's going to continue to bring in these tourists from everywhere, it better do something about this, because if they knew that they might be swimming in poo, well, they might not be coming that often.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of people come to Cape Town for a wonderful beach holiday and they expect to find pristine environments. And the city's marketing image is trying to promote this pristine environment. And yet there's this dirty secret that's underlying the marketing that is not communicated by the city adequately. We've had a very long battle with the city in terms of putting warning signs on the beaches when these plumes of sewage hit the beaches. But, you know, unfortunately, the time lag between measuring the taking the sample and actually getting the measurements out of the laboratory is around about 2 weeks. So you actually are always 2 weeks too late to warn the public about the problem. We've tried to get some other warning system in place, but so far we haven't managed to get anything that is real time. We were trying to do a modeling of the currents at one point, but unfortunately the colleagues who were involved in that part of the study, I personally think were leaned on by the city. That's just an allegation. It's not a proven fact. But, you know, when we did this study originally, we were working with Norwegian colleagues and they have been modeling the sewage plumes out in Norway and seeing how far those sewage plumes move if you actually let them run for as long as the sewage runs, which is every day, all day long, 365 days of the year, whereas the city in Cape Town uses instantaneous plume modeling. And that is actually one of the arguments we've had with them. They basically take an instant in time as if there's one little puff of plume of sewage, and then they model what happens to that little puff of sewage. And of course, it seems to disappear, you know? So that is actually quite a big issue. The other thing is, of course, that we've got very outdated SANS 241 guidelines, and that relates to our sewage. The city is only mandated to test for certain compounds, so they don't test for the full suite of bacteria and viruses and parasites. they also don't test for the full suite of chemicals that we're releasing. And that's where my work comes in as a chemist. I have been focusing on the usage of chemicals in our city and where those chemicals end up. And, you know, you just need to think for a minute of all the gardening centers that sell pesticides, all the pharmacies selling medication, all the ShopRites, etc., selling various pesticides and soaps and detergents and shampoos, etc. And think of that on a daily basis, our consumption of that on a daily basis. And none of our wastewater treatment plants are designed to take these compounds out, because the wastewater treatment plants are working on technology that was developed about 50 or 60 years ago when these compounds didn't even exist. And my job has been to trace these compounds from the inlet of the wastewater treatment plant to the outlet of the wastewater treatment plant, and then where it ends up. And same thing with the marine outfalls, to use the city's data of what gets pumped into the sea and then go look for those compounds out at sea. And we've we've actually found these persistent contaminants in almost every marine organism that we've tested, from sea urchins, from starfish, from mussels, seaweeds, top shells. We've looked at fish, and lately we've been looking at penguins, and we're finding these compounds in everything, and not just one compound. We're finding a plethora of these compounds. And, you know, let's just talk pharmaceuticals. We use those medications. They're designed for our bodies and our metabolism. But, you know, when we use those compounds, we don't metabolize them completely. And some of these compounds go through into our poop, and from thence it goes straight into the sea if you live between Salt River and Hout Bay. Otherwise, it goes through the treatment plants. But when I say through, I mean through. It passes through the treatment plant because the treatment plant can't take them out. So we're seeing the same degree of chemical pollution out in False Bay as what we're seeing around the areas where the marine outfalls are.
I was going to ask you, what's it like for the marine animals, for the fish, for those who inhabit the sea where the poo comes out? Do they leave the area? Do they also find the smell a little dreadful for them, or how do they react to it?
Well, you know, certainly the ecological disturbances must be very great. But, you know, since this practice has been going on for more than 100 years, it's very difficult to find a baseline situation in the whole of the peninsula where the marine life is unaffected. So it's difficult to use an ecological study as a comparison where you have a control site that is clean. And I might mention that we thought of using Hermanus as a control site, but you need to go and look at Hermanus' wastewater treatment plants, because it's also not a great situation, just as an aside. But, you know, when we actually look at the marine environment, we are seeing that many sites are now denuded of certain organisms. That might be because the habitat is not suitable. But what we did is we worked with the spermatologists at UWC, and we actually got sperm from a variety of species. We're still somewhat busy with that study, but to start off with, we worked with the human sperm from donors, and we worked with sea urchin and oyster sperm as indicators. So human sperm obviously is somewhat different to sea urchin and oyster sperm. Those are broadcasters. They broadcast the sperm into the ocean. And when we actually took that sperm and tested it with these persistent contaminants, we could see that the vitality and the various other factors or criteria that ensure that the sperm does its job have been affected, to the point where you might actually see a lack of fertility in these organisms and a lack of viability in these organisms. Many of these compounds, you might know, for instance, diclofenac, which is the muscle, when you've got sore muscles, you rub it on your sore muscles. Voltaren is one of its brand names. We found that in all the organisms that we tested. And diclofenac was actually responsible for the death of the vultures in India because it actually...
There's so much information that you've given us now, but just to bring it back to a practical level, quite often people look at Cape Town and they look at the Western Cape and say, whoa, thank heavens I live in the Cape because it is better governed. But the question has to be, if Hermanus isn't pristine, isn't... Fortunately, the skies in Hermanus are good, but if the water in Hermanus isn't pristine, where in the country is it? Give us a sense of what is happening along the coast if you go from Cape Town perhaps towards the east, and if it's getting worse because governance in certain areas you would assume is not as good as in the Western Cape, so it would be getting worse. And how many of the R.W. Johnson flesh-eating microbes are infesting areas in the east of the country?
Well, you know, there's definitely a huge governance and maintenance issue across the country. And what is not actually released directly into the sea is coming at us through our rivers. And whatever river is busy mouthing into this ocean is bringing that muck down from the cities. There have been quite a few inland studies and also quite a few studies in Durban and along the coast in PE that I'm aware of. So there are colleagues that are looking at this situation in various parts of our country. And the chemical pollution in South Africa is gross. I really want to say that we have a huge failure here. Our country is polluted from one side to the other. Professor Okonkwe recently did a water research funded, commission funded study on perfluorinated compounds inland and in our water ways and also in our drinking water. And perfluorinated compounds are the ultimate persistent contaminant. They're called forever chemicals. And there's something like 2,000 or more of them. And he tested about 50 of them, and he found them in every waterway. And we tested for those perfluorinated compounds in the marine organisms that we found, we're looking at, and they're in all of them. So the contamination also includes pesticides. We've seen pesticides in these marine organisms and in the fish, and pharmaceuticals. And, you know, the big problem here is that we specifically went to look for the pharmaceuticals that are persistent and are on the Stockholm Convention as being persistent. And there are compounds like sulfamethoxazole, which is an antibiotic that is used to treat people that are on antiretrovirals. And we have found that those compounds are causing an absolute a cascade of antimicrobial resistance in organisms, in disease causing organisms. Now, Professor Joe Barnes has been doing that study in a parallel to our study. Obviously, we haven't got far enough to release that data yet, but the antimicrobial resistance that these chemicals are driving is actually pretty serious. We found that the microbes were resistant to about 16 of our frontline antibiotics. And so that's
interesting point you make there. And for those who are on BizNews and thinking, come on, this is out there, The Economist had a piece on exactly this subject talking about the United States and that the United States water is so contaminated with exactly what you're talking about, the antibiotics that have gone through people's systems, that the antibiotics are becoming less and less effective as a result of the microbes getting, if you like, more resistant to it. But Leslie, what can we do as citizens of South Africa? Clearly, We must get bedonned with the companies that are polluting the water. That's point one. Get more investigative journalists out there. Get more citizens to wave flags and to say, stop stop killing our future generations and the world they're going to inherit. But today, right now, today, as citizens of South Africa, what would you propose that we do to start making a difference?
Well, the first thing is that we need to upgrade our wastewater treatment plants, because that's obviously the collection point of all this wastewater. Now, you know, the city keeps claiming that there's no ways to actually treat this, but yet they want to institute the foray reuse plants where they are taking sewage and recovering the water from that, and they want to inject it into our drinking water system directly. And so they are using technologies that are fairly effective at taking these compounds out. So there are actually technologies out there to treat water to the point where it is drinking water quality, more or less. A lot of my research actually goes around the removal of these compounds, and we have been developing various treatment options that actually pull these compounds apart and degrade them completely as cheaply as possible. But cost is really the big issue. Most people don't, or most cities don't want to spend money on treating the effluent to drinking water quality. One of my students has done a study where he has looked at how our current treatment system removes these compounds. And to some extent, the normal treatment system does take these compounds out of the water. But then they are in the sludges, because you remember it's just a transfer from one media to the other. So it goes from the liquid into the solid. And he got about 30 to 60% removal of different compounds into those sludges. So the point
that's not very good. 30 to 60% is not very good at all. But Leslie, just to again bring it back to the original question, which is putting poop into the sea around Cape Town. If our tourists, and there are gazillions of them coming to this city for its pristine nature, were to be aware of this, I'm sure perhaps that we would see an impact on tourism, and that might move the city of Cape Town to do something. But what kind of cost is involved here? How big an investment is required to reverse this historic system, which is not doing anybody any good, and least of all in the long term, the Cape Town economy?
Well, you know, if you have a look at Jordan Hill's budget, you can see, for instance, that they're throwing a heck of a lot of money at the Milderton Lagoon, at the Potsdam wastewater treatment plant to get that fixed up. And that process has been ongoing for about 5 or 6 years. So there's no quick fix here. There is budget being allocated in the ensuing years, and there are plans probably by about 2050, if I might be so bold as to say, to do something about the marine outfalls. So, you know, that requires a lot of political will and a lot of long-termism. And I must take my hat off to Jordan Hill Lewis, that is, he has actually made this a priority project, much more so than the other cities in the country. But, you know, it's not a quick fix. So we as people have to start thinking, what are we throwing into the drain? And start minimizing our usage of chemicals. You know, we really are completely trying to solve every problem in life these days with a chemical. If there's a fly, you spray it with Doom. If there's a cockroach, you've got the cockroach powder out. You know, if there's a rat, you've got the Radix out. We really need to start thinking about that and stopping it. We're also part of a group that are trying to stop the city spraying the verges with herbicides, because all of that washes into the ocean. So, you know, think where you can make a difference in your own life, I would suggest, and try and minimize your usage of chemicals in your household that are not degradable, and don't buy over-counter medicine unless you really have to. And don't go on antibiotics if you can avoid it.
Those are wonderful suggestions, but it is going to take a big change in behavior. Do you swim in the sea in Cape Town?
I occasionally do, right down on the South Peninsula.
Okay, so that's a place to go to. If you want to swim in the sea in Cape Town, listen to the prof, go to the South Peninsula. That's the place. And the water, is it safe to drink water in South Africa, or are there parts now that you'd find pretty dodgy?
Well, you know, the green drop and the blue drop reports are evaluations of how well we're doing in terms of our sewage treatment and in terms of our drinking water. So the blue drop report actually shows that Cape Town's water is still in pretty good drinking water is in good condition. That's not the case in other parts of the country. You just have to think of some places like Mukanda, and we've had problems in many smaller communities where the water is absolutely not potable anymore, and even the drinking water systems have collapsed. So it's a very patchy picture in South Africa. You might be lucky in your municipality where the drinking water system is still working properly, but you can't count on it in South Africa. And of course, that brings us to the whole plastic pollution issue, because then people are buying bottled water and throwing the bottles all over the show. So
I've got a pet peeve. I think it's Coca-Cola Company who've got this pump bottle. And they've now, in the past, you could buy a bottle, take off the top, put the water in, and then reuse it. They've now made it impossible to take the top off. So because they might want more profit, every time you want a bottle of water from this particular organization, you've got to buy a new bottle. It's just, it's really, really ugly that accountants can do that. But very quick answers. Would you drink the water in Johannesburg, Pretoria, Durban, Gqeberha, and Bloem?
Joburg has got a good reputation. Rand water is pretty good. So I think the drinking water, when it comes out of the taps, they've had great shortages there. It should be of reasonable quality. I have not been following the situation with Tshwane and Durban. I think people need to go and look at the Blue Drop report. It's relatively recent to get an idea of whether their water is safe. You can't see microbes and you can't see chemicals. And just to give you a real horror story, I've just started the study. I'm not very far with it, but I've been checking the drinking water in Cape Town for persistent contaminants. And the persistent contaminants are getting through into our drinking water in very, very low quantities, but they are there.
Well, I'm sure that Jordan Hill Lewis will be watching this discussion, and not least because you did give him a plaudit, but certainly the battle has only just begun. Professor Leslie Petrick, who's a professor at the University of Western Cape and one of South Africa's leading scientists in water, and I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.